Today is March 21st, 2015, the second day of spring, and this is Moviews Podcast number 112. I'm Taro Gasawar with my good friend John Westfall. And today, as we enter with the second day of spring, or experience the second day of spring, we're going to just talk about stuff. We don't have a theme.
Odds and ends, random musings from the top of our illustrious minds.
Okay. There we go. Okay, and the first thing that's kind of a rant, I guess. So earlier this week, on March 16th, Microsoft blogged about how it's going to get a smaller footprint on its disk storage by essentially removing stuff like, the recovery system.
And, well, who needs that?
Right. I mean, it's so minor. And,
you know, the weird thing is, in a few years, that might actually be a true statement. If we actually see cloud getting as... Because I think about when I set up a new computer now, so many of the things, so many of the settings are in the cloud, especially with Macs. You know, you add your iCloud account and your mail accounts show up again in Apple Mail and other stuff. So we might get to the day where recovery is just, hey, just log in again and boom, it's fixed.
Well, that's what Google wants you to believe, to get you to buy a Chromebook.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, that's the ultimate, and, you know, set it up. You log in and basically you're setting it up at that point. I've never done it myself. I don't have a Chromebook, but I heard someone speaking about it probably on This Week in Google, and they were saying that it took like maybe, you know, 4 or 5 minutes to set up a brand new Chromebook. It's basically log in and let it personalize it a bit by downloading stuff from the cloud, and the rest is in the cloud. But I'll say this as a counterpoint to your thesis, is that for the folks who need a PC, they're going to need stuff on the PC. So
yes, Microsoft might not be there. You know, Google Chrome, sure.
Yeah.
Apple, maybe, but the Apple hardcore editors and everyone else are going to disagree. But Microsoft, a lot of things run Windows, and a lot of those things are not happy to live in the cloud.
No, or if they're in the cloud, they're not running too well.
Yes, that's true.
So, but the whole rationale for this is, even though we now have literally terabytes of hard disk storage, we're seeing a movement to solid-state drives, SSDs, which are, at this point in time, in 2015, still relatively small, you know, 32 gigabytes, 64 gigabytes, 128. It's pretty typical for the low-end Windows 8 tablets, for example. Not Windows RT, but a full Windows 8. And so with 32 gigs, you're running a little bit close to the edge in terms of how much a system takes up of that storage. Add in a few apps, add some music, maybe videos, and pretty soon you got nothing. So that's the rationale for Microsoft trying to figure out a way to get a smaller footprint, something that we don't care about on a device with a spinning drive where we have terabytes, and we don't care if you take away 5 or 10 gigabytes to create a recovery system, but we do care if you have only 32 or 64 gigabytes. Like on a typical, Baytrail powered tablet. That said, I don't know how people are going to recover from things, or at least recover easily, because nobody has optical drives anymore. Microsoft doesn't seem to have an automated way for non-techies to build a USB bootable thumb drive to recover from. So they need to figure out what the ordinary person with no IT support is going to do when their solid-state-based device with 32 or 64 gigs of RAM, I'm sorry, of storage, suddenly doesn't boot one day or doesn't boot properly, and they need to do recovery, and there's, no way to recover.
Well, and it's interesting, while you were talking about that, I was thinking about the popular perception that SSDs don't die, that, you know, somehow because they're solid-state... Mm. They are somewhat invulnerable. And while hard disk drives, spinning old dinosaurs they are, do fail at about 5% chance that your hard disk will fail over its lifetime, SSDs are at about 1.5%. So, yes, it's not that it's going to be 5 out of 100 people, but still there's going to be 1 to 2 person, or 1.5 person, whatever half uses the computer, that is going to suffer from this out of 100. So that's still a little too high of an error rate for me to say, we don't need the recovery stuff anymore. Right. Or, and really, how big was the recovery stuff? What was Microsoft building in? I mean, Windows Backup, I can't imagine, was a 3 gigabyte, you know, utility or something like that.
I think on my systems, they were reserving about 5 or 6 gigabytes for the recovery partition on the hard drive based system. So,
but recovery partition, we're talking about just, you know, what do you do if you're losing files or how you have recovery, and it's not just the recovery partition. So it's a good question.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see what comes of this. I'm a little frightened. You know, there's I had that problem with my Venue 8 Pro. I mean, it was my own fault because I was running the technical preview of Windows 10 and something blew up and I couldn't see the screen.
I say it's Microsoft's fault.
All of that. And, it was an early tech preview, so, you know, use at your own risk. I understand that. But it did take me a while to just sort of sit down or after I decided one day to, you know, spend about 2 hours to try to figure out. It took me about an hour, it turned out. But, you know, I carved out about 2 hours to try to figure out how to fix it. And about an hour later, I had a booting system with its display again. But it was not a lot of fun.
It was not what you were wanting to do for those 2 hours.
No, not really. There were other things
exactly.
I would have preferred to do, but it is what it is.
I worry that this is another example of Microsoft not having any idea what they're doing. Just, you know, a little bit of, let's try this. Well, no, maybe we'll try this, and maybe we'll do this or that. And it seems like decisions out of Redmond these days. For a long time, we said Microsoft doesn't change. They don't update things. They're stayed in one position or another. But it seems like today, I have no idea what the next Microsoft announcement's going to be. You know, when they released, we were talking a little bit before the show about Office for the iPad.
Yeah.
When they released that and they said you need an Office 365 account to take advantage of this, that seemed like a, you know, yes, it was an exclusionary kind of thing. If I didn't have a 365 account, I couldn't use it. But it seemed like a solid business idea of, yeah, this is a valuable product. You're going to have to pay for it.
I understood
and
that.
And then, about 6 months later, not even a full year, and not even a full 2 quarters, just like a quarter of data, they go, now, you know what? It's going to be free for everyone. and yes, that's a great decision for me as the consumer. I'm very happy about that decision. But it leads me to think that on a business and a development side, Microsoft doesn't really know what they want to do.
No.
And it's kind of scary.
No, they're flipping the coin, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, that didn't work. Let's try again. Didn't work. Let's try again.
Well, on the plus side, they are trying different things. You know, they are failing fast, as people like to say.
I just worry that Microsoft is quickly becoming you don't know what they're doing, so let's not count on them for stability.
That is kind of a problem, isn't it?
I mean, if I was still deploying hardware in a server environment and I had clients who wanted a Windows server, I don't know if I would be quite so willing to recommend a Windows Server product to them because I don't know what the direction of Windows is in the future, server or desktop or tablet or phone.
Yep. And, well, in the meantime, as I was saying, I'm really worried about how we're going to recover Windows systems in the future. Well, and I should amend that to say, you and I, you know, as kind of techie geeky people, we'll figure out a way, or we'll have a friend who can tell us how to get ourselves out of some whatever quagmire we put ourselves in. But the average non-techie person who may not have a techie friend to depend on, they may be stuck between a rock and a hard place if something happens with no easy remedy, you know, no easy recovery system. In old days, you popped in the CD that came with your machine, which had a clean version of Windows 95 or 98 or whatever, and you rebooted and reformatted and rebuilt. And yeah, it wasn't easy, but it was obvious. Now, with no optical drive and no recovery disk and no recovery partition, one has to wonder. And you know, depending on the internet is not always. Or depending on internet access, is not always the smartest thing, too. You know, you might be stuck out in the middle of nowhere doing, you know, field engineering or something, and you've got no you know, you've got basically cell data with 5 gigabytes a month of data to use, and then what are you going to do?
Well, and the thing I worry about is that the Microsoft official position will be, you know what, just make an appointment, bring it to a Microsoft store, and they'll help you out.
If you've got one.
Because there are so many of them.
That's right.
You know, right now I'm looking at the list of Microsoft stores because I was curious. How many are there before I was going to launch into this rant? California has, looks like, the most. Mm-hmm. But then you've got states that are decent-sized states like Kansas, which has one. And, you know, Missouri has one. Utah has one. Virginia has two. They're doing pretty good. It worries me if that's their model where, you know, if you have problems, just like the Apple model of, hey, bring it in for Apple Care service and take it to the Genius Bar. You know, within, I'm in a pretty rural area right now. I can get to an Apple store in about 2 hours from where I'm at.
Okay.
If I go south or if I go north. That's annoying, but it's not horrible.
Right. It's doable.
However, if I need to get to a Microsoft store, the nearest, well, there is not a Microsoft store in my state. So there are no stores in Mississippi. There are no stores in Arkansas. The nearest, I guess, would be Knoxville, Tennessee.
Alrighty.
That's going to be a pretty big hike. Or I guess I could head over to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Or actually, Metairie, which is outside of New Orleans. I guess that's probably my closest.
Well, you know,
that's about a 6-hour drive.
And I think I've heard on Windows Weekly podcast, I think I've heard Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott saying there are no Microsoft stores in this little town called New York City.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting observation. Yes, if you go to this the somewhat big state of New York and you look at, well, there's a Fifth Avenue store coming soon.
Okay, but it's not open yet, right? So technically it's still out there.
There's one, it looks like, at the Time Warner Center in Columbus Circle.
Oh, okay.
That one might be open. In fact, it's got a little star, which means it's a curated selection of the best Microsoft products.
Wow.
Which makes you think it's a little hole in the wall. there's one on Staten Island, which is, again, one of the curated stores, which makes you think it's probably a hole in the wall. So if you actually need a real Microsoft store and you're in Midtown Manhattan, your best chance is to either go up to White Plains, which is going to be about an hour, or try to get over to Jersey and go to Paramus. That's going to be about another hour. So, yeah. And you're right in the heart of Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, but no Microsoft store.
No. It takes you about as long to get to a Microsoft store as it takes me to get to an Apple store. And as someone who lived in Manhattan and went to many Apple stores, Manhattan is crawling with Apple stores.
Including the flagship.
Yes. Yeah. You can go see the Giant Cube or... Yeah. Heck, you're in Grand Central Terminal. You can go to an Apple store before you even catch your train home.
Well, we certainly aren't going to figure it out for Microsoft, and hey, neither are they, so what the heck.
Yes, but if they would like to hire me and pay me a lot of money, I'll figure it out.
There you go. And I'll join you as a flunky to shine your shoes or something.
Well, yeah. We'll do it together.
Yeah.
All the best teams siphon money and make decisions, you know?
Now, on a much more positive note, I wanted to mention Google Domains. I may have mentioned here before. I moved one of my domains to it, I think, late last year when they're in beta mode. I think they're out of beta mode now. So Google Domains is a domain registrar. You know, if you have a site, or not a site, a name like mobileviews.com, you can register it there instead of, you know, the usual suspects and you know who they are. I moved it from one of the usual suspects. And more recently, in my day job, I needed to move two domains from a contractor that had built something for us to my own organization, since the project was over and I wanted to take control of the two domain names. And so they had it registered on, you know, one of the usual suspects, and we worked together for them to release the name to me, and I transferred it to Google Domains, and I have to say it was very, very painless. It was quite nice, and quite frankly, it was cheaper at $12 a domain. So
yeah, that's an interesting point. I have a bit of a domain buying problem. I have many domains that I am not using, and they are all at one of the usual suspects.
Yeah,
and I do notice that I have 28 domains.
Oh, just a few.
Yeah, I told you I have a problem. I am thinking about my usual suspect right now charges a bit more for the .orgs, the .nets, mm-hmm. the other random things. So I'm wondering about potentially moving. So in terms of feature sets, what kind of features does Google Domains have?
Well, it has all the things you need to, you know, to set your MX records and, you know, set your domains. Or if you don't want to, like, for example, I just needed to forward those domains to an existing, you know, our organization's existing a subpage on our existing website. So they had, you know, a nice quick forwarding mechanism that I simply pointed to and boom, it was done.
Cool.
And I didn't really need to go through, you know, 5,200 pages and steps of, you know, do you want to buy this? You want to buy that? And blah, 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 blah.
That is a problem with some of the usual suspects.
Yeah.
My usual suspect has actually gotten very good about not doing that so much with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I, in the past, had domains at a couple other places that were just horrendous for those 7,000 pages of... No, I don't want to buy this. No, I don't want to buy this. I really don't want to buy this.
Right. The only place where they do it, I wouldn't even call it selling, but gives you a set of options is, okay, now that you've moved or created your domain with us, would you like us to help you set up a site? And they have maybe half a dozen, you know, commercial third-party partners that you can point at, or you have the option to use Google Blogger to set up a website. So, you know, it's pretty painless. It's like I said, it's $12 for a .com dot, you know, net dot org kind of thing. I didn't look at the other dots, other domain types, but the usual ones, the dot coms and so forth, are $12 each. It's hard to beat, really.
That is good to know. Yeah. And this is a separate entity from the old Google Apps that you used to be able to get for free.
Correct.
So this is note that.
Right. This is domains.google.com.
Cool.
Yep. Started up late last year, I want to say summer of last year. I've been using it on my personal site. Like I said, I just did the transfer from one domain registrar to another and went off pretty easily. I had no hiccups, no problems. You know, I had to wait a couple hours for things to percolate down through the network, but that would happen anywhere, so that was not a big deal.
Well, that's better than some of the usual suspects who decide to make it horribly painful to get your domain out of their little graspy hands.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, the one that this one was registered at was one of the big ones, and it was, you know, the other party had to basically release it to me, but that was it. Once they did that, it was pretty easy. From my side, it was painless. Okay, another item that I really don't have a feel for, but my first generation Nexus 7 just got the Android 5.1 update a couple days ago. I don't know if I see any difference, to be honest, but I will say this. The last couple of updates have been much faster than the original Android 5.0 update last year, which made my Nexus 7 a pig, a very, very slow, wallowing pig. And in fact, I didn't upgrade my Nexus 4 until recently because of that, until my Nexus got some really weird battery issues that the 5.01 seemed to fix, or 5.02, I forget which one I have now. But there it is. It's rolling out to you if you have a Nexus-type device. No sign of it on my Nexus 4, which is still running 5.0.something. But I'm looking out for it. Any of your devices get the 5.1 update yet, John?
I assume my original Nexus 7 will have it if I boot that up. I haven't booted it up, I think, in a couple of months. So I might have actually missed the 5.01 update. So
yeah.
I may have dodged the bullet on that one.
Now, you know, we were talking about where to put your stuff on the web, and one popular place people are putting things on the web is Medium.com. I have not used it myself, but, you know, it seems like a lot of people do use it instead of creating their own website. For example, I know when GigaOM fell apart a couple weeks ago, I know at least one of the writers from there moved his work, Kevin Toffel, for folks who know him, does a lot of great mobile writing, moved his work to Medium.com until he finds a new landing place. And I thought, well, you know, because of that, I got kind of interested in it. and I took a look at it and haven't used it. But one thing I did notice is that Medium now has an app for iOS that lets you both read and write to it. So I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe as WordPress drives me bonky with its updates and exploits and things, maybe if Medium seems permanent, I'll move it there. But otherwise, I've been pretty happy with Tumblr. I'm not quite sure what the advantages of using Medium over Tumblr. I just don't know anything about it quite yet.
Yeah, honestly, it's very interesting. I haven't played with Medium yet either, but I'm finding a lot of the people I see going toward Medium are the people who have become otherwise annoyed with things like WordPress. Mm-hmm. And they crave kind of the simplicity of it. So I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm quite happy with WordPress right now, but I'm sure at some point it'll do something that annoys me, that makes me think about ditching it. But I've been on WordPress for probably about 6 years now, so I think I've been pretty happy with it.
Well, you know, WordPress is in and of it, from terms of features and third-party plugins, all that is great. But the security issues with it have been so horrendous. In fact, one of my websites, ogasawalrus.com, where I used to write about free software and open source and that sort of thing, got hacked, and quite frankly, probably because I didn't patch it fast enough. I think I was on travel that week, and I didn't have a chance to sit down and do the update to WordPress when I should have. In fact, I think we were in Seattle at the time. I think I was there with you at the summit. And my site got hacked, and it was just irrecoverable. So I basically took down ogasawalrus.com. It hasn't been up since then.
I had a very minor WordPress hack a few years ago that came through a bad theme that I have. But at that point, I told myself, you know what, you just got to do the updates every week, every 2 weeks. And I installed a few plugins that their whole point was security. So they're basically doing security a little better than WordPress does. And then I've had no problem since then. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been doing the same with my existing WordPress sites, where, you know, I try to update them on a timely basis, basically when I see that there's an update needed. So there you go. One more thing I didn't want to mention before I let you get to your best of thing is that if you are in the U.S. and you're interested in what the federal government is doing, they have a new website called analytics.usa.gov, which is a dashboard for government websites. It's kind of interesting. I don't know how accurate it is, but it's kind of neat to look at. So head over to analytics.usa.gov to see what the U.S. federal government's dashboard is. It tells you, you know, which sites are the most popular and all of that. It's quite interesting. As you might imagine, I think the IRS is a very popular, if you want to use that word, website right now.
Popular in a bad way.
Yeah.
As someone who just filed their taxes this week. So that's it's interesting whenever the government does release numbers like that, just to look and see what is getting popular, what isn't. I suppose for those of us that run very low to no traffic websites, it's kind of cool to see that some people get traffic.
It is.
So my topic that I came up with, just because this is kind of a whatever we feel like show, is a rant/ still trying to find the best mixed kind of topic. So about 6 years ago, I realized that my brain was getting to the point where it couldn't hold all of the things I had to do on a regular basis. Mm. So I found a piece of software, a service called Tooledo, Tooledo. Mm-hmm. So stupid name, but cool service. It's a to-do list manager that is pretty insanely customizable. So for example, for me, what I really like is I can set a start date and time, as well as a due date and time. And I can tell it, just don't show me the things that haven't started yet. So that report that I'm going to have to write in 3 weeks, mm-hmm. but I don't have the data for it until 2 weeks from today, don't even show it to me, because I don't want to have it hanging over my head. I'm a very kind of quirky mental kind of guy sometimes, and just seeing it there makes me annoyed. And over the years, Tooledo has bumped up a couple of their features here and there, but their app really still looks like something out of the web 1.0 days. It's not the prettiest. So I've been very tempted by things like Todoist and Wunderlist, which mm-hmm. are also very popular apps. Mm-hmm. I've installed both, played with them. They look really pretty, but they don't have many features. And also I've thought about, well, I could just roll my own. There are people who use Evernote, people that just use a to-do text file. And then we've got kind of these in-between solutions for task management like Apple Reminders and Google Tasks that let you have very basic lists, but if you want anything more than write it on a list and check it off when you're done, so you want to be able to sort by context or folder or start time, end time, etc., you're not in luck with those. So I'm at this point right now where I'm using ToodleDoo because of the features, but I really wish it was prettier. And I'm just kind of curious what you do for your to-do list management.
Well, you know, it's funny. Most of my to-dos are in Evernote, like you mentioned earlier. So I have a file in there called an action item list that I fold over or cut over annually. So once a year, I create a new list, and then I archive the old one. And Evernote has a checkbox system, so I literally just leave it unchecked until it's done. It is not the best way to do it, I probably think, but it is the simplest, since I always have Evernote open when I'm at work.
How do you handle recurring tasks, things that you have to do repeatedly?
I put them in a calendar.
Okay.
Yeah. For quick and dirty stuff, though, I do one of two things. Either, and this is kind of, people may be shocked by this, I use either the built-in Notes app in iOS, or I use Google Keep if I'm on an Android device. And no, they don't talk to each other, unfortunately. But they do talk amongst themselves, so to speak, within their ecology. So, you know, iOS and OS, can OS 10 see Notes? Maybe not. But the iOS devices can all see the Notes, I believe. And Google Keep is available on the web as well as on your Android devices, so all of those devices can see my
things. And OS X can see Apple Notes.
Okay.
Which I know because I, for some reason, use Apple Notes quite a bit, even though I'm a big Evernote user.
Yeah, me too.
So it's a very bizarre thing. Occasionally, I'll go through my Apple Notes and go, you know, these really should belong in Evernote, and I'll just email them through the Evernote gateway to get them into Evernote. Or I think now there's a share sheet that I can just go straight to Evernote with it. But it is very interesting to me how there are so many of these products out there, and yet you and I both have kind of this amalgamation of sometimes we use this, sometimes we use that.
Right.
The reason I don't like putting recurring tasks on my calendar is because I really loathe all-day items, and I don't want to parcel out any time on my calendar because then various services tap into my calendar to know my free busy. So. I wouldn't want to throw something on there and actually have someone go, oh, well, you're busy at that time, and go, well, no, actually, that's just the reminder to do that every couple of weeks. Or So it's a really weird kind of world we live in, where it seems like for most people these days, if you are a trendy, you know, a.k.a. hipster kind of person, you can get away with something very pretty. But if you actually have a serious amount of things that you have to keep track of, you're living in a very fragmented sort of existence.
Yeah. But, you know, I will say that the reason I use, depending what device I'm holding in my hand, Notes for iOS or Google Keep on Android devices, because they're so much faster than Evernote for quick and dirty. So, for example, I'm looking at my notes on my app, my iPhone right now, and, you know, I got a call from my mom saying that a friend of my dad had passed away and I need to go to her funeral. And so, you know, I was literally walking down the street, so I just grabbed my phone and she's talking to me, had my headset on, and I said, okay, when is it, where is it, and I just started typing it in because it's just, again, so fast. I had to stay at a hotel, and, you know, I can never remember where I park, so I used the Notes app to say, you know, where I was parked and, you know, what the stall number was and all that kind of stuff, because I'm too cheap to valet park. You know, it's a little note for me to file a request for something. And, oh, here's another one, a parking at the airport. You know, you go away a couple of days, come back for your car. And so that's the kind of stuff I do with it. You know, it's very quick and dirty things, saying, hey.
You hope it's still there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? And, you know, I hope my phone still works when I come back to it.
Well, it is. It's just also, you know, I use Android Keep, you know, Google Keep, and also Notes when I'm on those devices just because they are fast.
Yeah.
I also use Apple Reminders quite a bit because I can tell Siri to create a reminder.
Mm.
And I will note that ToodleDoo, the service I use, their app actually will take Apple Reminders and convert them to ToodleDoo tasks so that you can use Siri for that.
Yeah.
So that is one place I've actually seen Siri kind of unexpectedly work really well for me, with the ability to just say, you know, at 6 o'clock tonight, throw – this into my bag so that tomorrow I have it at work or something like that, or call so-and-so when you get home, et cetera.
Yeah. It'd be better if you had a robot that you could tell Siri, okay, activate the Apple robot and have it thrown in my bag tomorrow morning before I leave.
You know what is really interesting about robots or things or Siri-type things? This week, one of our so Carrie hangs out with some of the ladies that live in our apartment complex, which is just a little 12-apartment unit complex, and we're the youngest residents. And one of them is an older woman who has been retired for a few years, and she was talking about how she got an Amazon Echo.
Okay.
And she was very happy with it.
Interesting.
And spoke very highly of it, was telling many of the other older retirees, you should really think about getting one. So that was one place. We joke about Amazon a lot, you know, especially with the Fire Phone and
which
you know,
we talked about
weirder,
1 year ago.
Yes, well, some of their weirder efforts. But on a side note, I have to give props to Amazon because something they're doing with the Echo is resounding with a demographic that doesn't typically love technology that much.
Interesting.
You know, in fact, the woman who lives right next door to the woman who likes her Amazon Echo just got her first computer ever about 2 months ago.
Wow.
And the woman next to her uses an iPad for emailing with her her kids, but doesn't have anything other than just an iPad. So it's very interesting to look into that demographic and see what they're using and what has kind of hit that market and tried to get acceptance from all levels of tech user.
Yeah, you know, and another interesting one that may or may not happen. I don't know if it's a rumor. Actually, no, it's probably a rumor. But the rumor is the next Apple TV will have Siri built in, so you can talk to your Apple TV.
Yes, that is a rumor I heard as well. And what I'm curious about with that is how will it handle, because the Apple TV is one of the few devices that Apple makes that is designed, I would assume, for multiple users. No, I don't think Apple thinks that we all just have, you know, my wife has an Apple TV, she hooks up to our TV, and I have my own Apple TV.
You should, of course.
So, of course. But if Siri is tied in, since Siri knows who you are, what does it do if another user uses it? I don't think it's really – it would have to be reworked a little bit. You'd have to have like Siri Family Edition or Siri's Little Sister or something like that. But
that's a good point.
That can support multiple users.
Yeah. On the other hand, Siri is speech independent or user independent. So, you know, it doesn't have any learning. So it doesn't need to know that you're you and your wife is her. And, you know, it just needs to know that you're asking something. I guess what you're talking about is context. Well, they know when I say add to the calendar, whose calendar will it add to, that sort of thing.
Well, what I'm really hoping Apple does is, and this has got virtually no play in the blogosphere or in the media, but they quietly released this feature with iOS 8 for families and for family units.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so my wife and I, we have a family set up, and it, you know, I just realized the other day, hey, there's a shared calendar that it created for us. And I think it might have even created shared tasks. So what I'm hoping is that Apple, you know, Apple has some very smart people. I don't think this is something that they wouldn't have thought of. But someone says, hey, you know, if you're connected to a family and you're living in the living room at that family, there should be an option for, you know, let's Siri add these to the shared tasks or the shared calendar instead of the individual calendar.
By the way, you know, this is totally off topic, but when you mentioned family units, and I'm showing my age here, I immediately thought of the Coneheads on Saturday Night Live.
That is a perfectly acceptable thing to think of.
I think the Conehead should be the Apple TV spokes aliens. When
I'd go for that.
Okay, so toodledoo.com. You know, we should, since we had no theme this one, maybe this would be a good idea for a theme for one of our other podcasts is note-taking apps, which I think we've discussed in the past. And, of course, one of my favorites died right soon after that spring pad. But, you know, I wonder what happened to things like, you remember the Web 2.0 days way back when? What happened to services like Remember the Milk and 37 Signals and, you know, all those kind of...
Remember the Milk is still around, I believe.
Yeah?
I don't know about 37 Signals.
Yeah.
Hmm.
They had High Rise and all those things.
Well, we should stop talking about these services because they will go out
as soon as we talk about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of things, so Google released their calendar for iOS app. You are not a fan of it, I take it.
So I wanted to be a fan of it because it's the only client that I've found that actually supports colors on a Google Calendar. On the web, on the interface on the desktop, you can set different colors for different events, which I've thought about doing in the past, and I've done it in various times.
Mm-hmm.
But when you sync it to your device, invariably every client that I've used, with maybe the exception of one, doesn't sync that data. It just syncs it all under one color. So I thought, cool, now I can start using those colors again. Of course, it's a little limited because I'd rather have a native app instead of a web app for my calendar on my computer, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I don't have a native app that does the color support anyway. I'm just convinced that everyone hates me and doesn't want me to have colors in my life. So I installed it, and I started playing with it. I actually moved it into the calendar spot on my iPhone, took the previous calendar app, which was Fantastical, and moved it away and put that there. But try as I might, I could not get myself to like using it.
Mm.
I would open it. It would be slow to load up. Like, the Gmail app is slow to load up. Google's apps just don't run that quick on iOS.
That's true, isn't it? Google apps are slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really thought about that.
And so once I get it open, I thought, okay, cool, here it is. And it would just give me, at least the default was to give me an agenda view. And I could get a month view and a week view. Mm-hmm. But what I really missed was the ability in month view in Fantastical to hit a thing and just see the list of tasks for that day. So I tried it for 4 or 5 days, and then it got pushed in. It's still on the device, but it is Fantastical is back in the calendar spot. Yeah.
Well, you know, having used Fantastical 2 or 3 for a while, I finally got, I don't know, something about it, the way I added events to it was just driving me crazy a couple of months ago, maybe late last year. And I just took it off my front page of my iPhone, and I replaced it with the default Apple Calendar, which works fine, syncs with, you know, Google Calendar. So, you know, my life was good. I did want to like this, like you, I wanted to like it. I do kind of like it, except one thing that's kind of weird to me is, as you mentioned, it doesn't have the month view. Or it does, but it's kind of a weird month view. You got to touch the month, and it'll pop things down. But the other views available are only, and I'm kind of looking at it now, agenda view, which I like, a day view and 3-day view. There's no week view or 2-week view. And, you know, it's kind of like, remember when we were talking about our days as Microsoft MVPs, and when Microsoft took away the month view and we started yelling and screaming at the meeting saying, what are you doing? We need the month view. And they said, nobody uses it. And we said, we all use the month view in unison. These people live in a bubble that is very different from us. It's kind of like, I was referring back to This Week in Google podcast. I was listening to some folks talk about why the Pixel Chromebook doesn't have LTE. And that's because 85% of the Pixel high-end Chromebooks are sold to Google employees who have Wi-Fi all the time. Like the rest of us who are, you know, in these vast wastelands without Wi-Fi often. So
it is interesting to me. Ever since we had that fateful conversation, I've thought about what kind of work environment would I have to be in where I didn't need month view. And it would be if I was constantly getting – if it was just when I came in every day, it was tackle these days items and I wasn't responsible for anything far out into the future.
Right.
But as a professor – when I plan my syllabi in January, I have to be looking all the way out into April and May. And even, you know, I'll have someone tell me, oh, this report is due 3 months from now. Well, I need to know what am I doing in that week 3 months from now. So I know if I would have time or if I have to set a due date earlier. So yeah, month view is invaluable to me. I really don't know. I'd love to know how people get by without it. I would love to believe that the people who get by without it are just disorganized, horrible people. But I'm pretty sure they're not. I just don't understand how they exist.
It is difficult. And, you know, I think, you know, I should talk to someone, to like a geriatric specialist or something. But I think as you get older and time gets shorter, paradoxically, you need to look out at longer spans of time. Even though you have less time to live. Your parents maybe, they have doctor's appointments every 3 months, maybe every 6 months, you know. And they need to kind of, when they're planning to talk, you know, going someplace to their friends, say, well, that's like a month and a half or not. Well, let me check. I may have a doctor's appointment that day. You know, like maybe I can't meet you for lunch that day.
Well, it is not uncommon for me to have to check for something that's within the next 30 to 45 days.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and beyond 45 days, I still check, you know. really, the only time I can tell you I know for sure I'm open is probably the first week of May.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's far enough out that I could pretty much book you anytime. But okay. I've got stuff to do. I'm busy.
Yep. And we do
I'm
need
not
those...
like these freeloading Microsoft employees that don't have anything to do or something.
They only need a week
don't view. Don't use month view.
They only need the week view. And apparently at Google, you only need a three-day view because that's the longest it looks at.
I mean, granted, the people that we talked to that said nobody uses month view, I don't think any of them are still employed by Microsoft. So maybe they should have used month view, but that's just my opinion.
But, you know, we do need sort of a sliding scale of views. I think we need a more sophisticated way to look at calendars that accommodates different lifestyles, different, you know, work types. Some people, like apparently the Microsofties, only need to look a week ahead at a time.
Yeah.
You know, our parents probably need to look like a year ahead at a time. Like, am I going to be alive? You know, that kind of thing. I mean, seriously, right? There comes a point in your life that says, you know, I need to plan for certain things. And, you know, in 3 years, I may not be here.
I care about doing my taxes.
You know? But, you know, it does happen. And you do need to look at life a little bit differently as, you know, different points. Like, when you're in a college student, you're living like, you know,
Hour by hour,
exam by exam, right? When's my next exam? Yeah. That's the only thing in your mind, right? When's Friday?
when is my next class? I'm pretty sure I'm in my next exam.
Yeah. Right? It's a very compressed timeline to live in. And as you get older, it decompresses, right? Your timeline becomes very much longer. Like, you know, like I got a plan when my daughter was, you know, a baby, I'd like, well, in 20 years, I need to have this much saved for a college education, or 18 years, actually, you know. So, you know, those kind of things you do start to worry about.
You can hope that she'll be a little bit laggy in 20 years is how long you need. She'll probably be 18, maybe 17 if you're unlucky.
It was 18. We actually started before she was born, so.
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually 20 years, now that I think
you
about
really
it.
Do need month view. You need year view.
I need decade view.
Decade.
Yeah. I mean, I had the spreadsheets out and I was like, okay, if we get this kind of annual rate of return and, you know, 18 and 20 years, what I'm going to have and that sort of thing. But at any rate, so, you know, different sliding scales of calendar views. Okay. The last item I wanted to mention is an update to probably one of my most used third-party apps on the iPhone. And that's Camera Plus, which is a photo manipulation app that I like it. You know, it does everything I need to fix the contrast and pump up the saturation if I think the sky should be a little bluer when I send it to folks in wintry lands in the Northeast to make them feel worse than they already do. So it got an update, and the big deal is that it has a new user interface if you have the larger displays on iPhone 6 or iPhone 6 Plus. So if you've got Camera Plus, take a look at it. To me, I'm not sure I like the new UI for the bigger displays. I think it just made the font smaller and harder to read for my aging eyes, but it's still a good app, and well, maybe there's a hidden option to make the fonts a little larger. Well, that's all I got for this week, John. You got anything else?
No, I will have to check out that upgrade to Camera Plus. Yep. I own Camera Plus, but I don't have it installed usually just because I don't use it that much.
Oh, wow. So. I use it literally every day.
Do you shoot with it or do you just edit with it?
I edit with it. I don't shoot with it.
Okay, yeah, because I've tried shooting with it and it's been too slow. I guess I'm just a really speed-oriented person.
Yeah, yeah.
If you keep me waiting, I will be angry at your device.
Yeah, I've got, I got my iPhone 6 Plus, in October? And I've got...
yes, 6 weeks after me.
Yeah, I've got about 1,200 photos on here, so I take a lot of photos.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know how many I have, but it's not 1,200.
Yeah.
It is, it doesn't tell you, does it?
No, it does. If you go to, here, we'll do a little tutorial while we're doing the podcast. If you hit albums, it'll show you how many photos are in each album, so camera roll is the one you're looking for.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Camera roll. Why do I have so many friggin' albums? And I don't have camera roll anymore. Oh, I have all photos.
Oh, interesting.
My all photos is 1,316.
You take a lot, too.
Yeah, but there are also things I save, too. So things that get thrown in. You know, I see an image on Safari and I save that.
Right.
But yeah, I guess I take a lot of photos, too.
Yeah. Well, actually, I have 1,679, but I figure about 400 or 500 of them are camera plus dupes. So I'm estimating 1,200 or so. Like I said, I use it a lot. It's really fun. Okay, so MobiViews Podcast 112, the Seinfeld episode about nothing.
It was a good episode about nothing.
It was good nothing.
I was very happy with it.
Next time, maybe we'll have a good something. And we're gonna try to invite some old friends back, I think, to talk about a couple of topics. So we might have some guests in a couple of weeks. MobiViews Podcast 112, second day of spring. Hope you guys see some spring-like weather wherever you are. Talk to you later.